My next guest is the owner, broker, and a friend of mine, Brittany Goyen from BB Realty CT with offices in Middletown and Glastonbury. Brittany, welcome back to WICC.
Hi, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no. Thank you for coming on. I appreciate it. According to Realtor.com, 92% of people who sold their homes within the last year accepted at least some buyer-friendly terms. 41% accepted contingencies in their contract. And Brittany, when the public is asking about the real estate market, generally what people who don't really understand the market are asking, is it a buyer's market or is it a seller's market?
You know, everybody loves to ask if it's a buyer or seller's market. First, I do want to address the 92% of people accepting buyer-friendly terms. I think that people would probably hear that number and think, oh, great, like it must be a buyer's market. But I think that as a real estate professional, my first question would be, what is Realtor.com considering a buyer-friendly term? And what are they giving up to get that term accepted as well? But to answer your question, Joe, right now, our months of inventory in Connecticut are sitting around 3 or 4 months. In a buyer's market, it's 6 or more months of inventory. 6 or less months of inventory is considered a seller's market.
Interesting. Okay. I heard from a broker in Wallingford just a couple of days ago that there are currently only 6 houses, single-family homes, on the market in Wallingford. And so, obviously, inventory in some towns is extremely low. What would you say to somebody who has been thinking about selling? Is now maybe the time? Is it more likely if they were to put up a house now that they might see what we had seen early, like in the pandemic, the multiple offers, people offering over asking? What would you tell someone looking now?
So I think it's definitely still a great time to sell. The interest rates have definitely shifted the market slightly in Connecticut, but buyers are still out there in multiple offers. They're still getting outbid. We're still seeing lots of homes go over asking price. We are not seeing it go crazy like it was, I would say, mid to end of 2020, but it's definitely still a strong seller's market.
Definitely. Now, here's the other thing. I think this is important because I've talked to people who have kicked around the idea of selling their home. And their biggest fear, and I was hoping you could kind of explain the process and talk anybody who maybe has this misconception. You could put your house on the market. You can get a full price or above asking price offer. And simply say no and just not sell your house.
Yep. And I feel like a lot of people think, oh, well, if I list my house, what if I can't find somewhere to go? I always tell our clients, we're not in the business of making you homeless. If you choose that and you want to be quote unquote homeless and go rent somewhere or, you know, whatever your situation may be, then that's fine. But we're in the business of putting people into homes, not making them homeless.
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely a concern people have, in especially now, again, in a low inventory market, because here's the other thing I've noticed, Brittany, it seems to me, when people begin the home search, they're not worried about their home selling. They never seem to be. It's always, I want to make sure I find a house, then I'm more comfortable putting my home on the market, as if their home's going to fly off the market in a day.
Yep.
And that's not.
Yep.
That's not good. Right?
Well, I mean, and to your point, lack of inventory is definitely a concern for most everyone, but because there is such a lack of inventory and there are still multiple offer situations happening, a buyer is probably going to wait for you to find a property. They're not going to wait years, but they're going to give you a little bit of time.
We're talking to Brittany Goyen, the owner broker of BB Realty CT, offices in Middletown and Glastonbury. Brittany, what's the advantage of buying a home right now? Here's the thing, and I think this is important to remember, right? I mean, you've been a realtor for a long time, so have I. people, even in the worst market conditions, there's always people looking to buy. There's always going to be somebody moving in the town that needs a place to go. Obviously, you mentioned interest rates are kind of high. Pickings are kind of slim right now. When you are meeting with buyers, what are you advising them? What's the advantage to doing it now? And what's like their long-term prognosis?
So I actually, I learned something, and I don't know if you know this, but every recession in U.S. history, except for 2008, which is the one that everybody remembers, obviously it was most recent, resulted in housing prices going up. So I feel like a lot of people are concerned, like, well, what if I buy right now and housing prices drop? The reality of the 2008 recession is that there was a lot of mortgage fraud going on. So that's all been kind of locked down, and obviously mortgage fraud still happens, but not at the rate that it was happening prior to the 2008 crash. So why not buy now, I guess, would be my question. You can date the rate and marry the mortgage.
Oh, I like that. I like that. By the way, I didn't realize that about prices going up during recession. Because, again, right, that's another one of those thoughts people have is I'm going to buy this house and then in a month it's going to be worth nothing. Right.
Yep.
And I'm ruined. And unfortunately, that's just not the reality of it. And as you said, in 2008, and I think it's important to remember, there was a lot of mortgage fraud. There were also a lot of those awful subprime mortgages. I remember helping a client trying to get out of one of those houses that they bought a few years. I want to say around 2012, I think it was. They had an adjustable rate mortgage.
Yep.
That was at 16.99% and was about to jump up to 21%.
Crazy.
I mean, that's like criminal.
Yeah. This morning I looked up rates and they're at 7.518 right now. So we're still nowhere near that rate.
Right. So again, as bad as people might think things are now, and as much as people would want to complain about, and you've mentioned this to me before, not here, but just in general, what are people paying on their credit card interest rates right now?
Yeah. And the other thing I've told you too is that people don't realize that renting is 100% interest. And when you look at it that way, it really hits home.
Oh, my goodness. Rent is 100%. Yeah. Ha. Huh. Isn't that something? Right.
You
I mean,
get that back.
It's yeah. And I've seen too. And I think I've mentioned it on this program, maybe even last time we talked, 90% of people in this country who are millionaires made their money in real estate. Like,
yep.
That's where success lies, is in having property. And as you say, when you're paying rent, all you're actually doing is paying someone else's mortgage.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
And then some. Typically, there is a profit margin in there as well.
All right. I want to ask you some more questions. Second homes, investment properties, stuff like that, is whether or not this is a good time. My guest this half hour, Brittany Goyen, the owner broker of BB Realty CT, offices in Middletown and Glastonbury, and online at ctbbrealty.com. Brittany, thank you for being here and for talking us through the current Connecticut real estate market.
Thank you, Joe.
All right, Brittany, is now a good time to be looking at, say, a second home or maybe an investment property?
So I think that the good part about looking for an investment property right now is that prices are still high. It does cost a little bit more for you to get a loan on these properties. But if you're buying in cash, especially, there's not really a worry there. But we are seeing a lot of foreclosures come back on the market in Connecticut. And we have not seen a ton of foreclosure activity over the last couple of years through COVID. So I think that now is a really good time to buy an investment property.
Yeah, that's interesting. Why do you think we're seeing more foreclosures?
Well, I think that they had all kinds of different freezes and amenity programs and all of that through COVID. And
right.
I think that a lot of the come to an end. So if people were still experiencing financial hardship after that, the foreclosure process has gone through at this point, or they're in a short sale process. And so, you know, those are starting to come to fruition.
Could be a good opportunity to find really good deals on these investment properties or second homes, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, Brittany, tell me something. What would you say? You know, you do real estate 24/7, 365, right? I mean, I'm kind of watching it most of the time, but you're always up in it. You're always talking to people about it. What would you say is the biggest misconception with the real estate market right now?
So, you know, I don't know exactly what the public is saying. I just know what my clients are saying, but I think that people probably think that the market has slowed down a bunch because of the interest rates being so high. And I know that other realtors in real estate have said, you know, the market's shifting. It's definitely going to slow down. But we're still seeing plenty of real estate activity and plenty of multiple offer situations. And we're still, in some circumstances, writing offers on multiple properties for the same buyer because there are buyers out there and the competition is high. So while interest rates are high, they have not halted the market by any means.
All right. Last thing, with interest rates as high as they are, which price ranges are being most affected by those? Is it more expensive homes or less expensive homes?
So I really think that it depends on how you look at this one, because obviously if you have a 7% interest rate on a $1 million home, you're paying way more than a 7% interest rate on a $100,000 home. So I guess in technicality, it would be the higher priced home. However, if you're thinking of this question from the angle of what type of person is most affected, then it would be the low to moderate income households, because the fact of the matter is, interest rates are high, housing prices are high and continue to go up, and the lower moderate income households are having a harder and harder time accessing affordable housing.
Good answer. Good stuff. I appreciate this, Brittany. It's, you know, it's so interesting to me because I talk to people all the time in people in media. Obviously, I talk to a lot of people in real estate, and it's so interesting to me how the public's perception of what the real estate market is and what's really going on, you know, it's one of those things where if you have experienced it, if you've recently purchased something or sold something or know someone that did, that generally whatever that one person's experience is and they're like, hey, the market's this, that's what people tend to believe. You know, like you said, you don't really follow what the public is saying. All you're going by is what your clients are telling you.
Yeah. Well, and I think to your point, too, people go based off of what people that they know, love, and trust are saying. And we know as real estate professionals what's actually happening in the market. But we definitely get kind of undermined by the public opinion, regardless of what we have to say about the market. So,
Brittany, if somebody had some real estate questions for you, how could they get in touch with you?
Absolutely. They could call my direct cell number at 860-608-5824, or they could check out our website at ctbbrealty.com.
Brittany, every time I come on here, I always like to update people on the real estate market, and you just know it to me as well or better than anybody here in Connecticut. So always appreciate the time. Always appreciate your insight.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Joe.
You're very welcome. Again, Brittany Goyen, the broker owner of BB Realty CT with offices in Middletown and at Glastonbury, and as she mentioned, online at ctbbrealty.com. My next guest runs the group Take Back Connecticut. It's a group of freedom-loving and conservative-minded individuals that want common sense and for we the people to take back the state of Connecticut. Welcome to Amy Borden. Amy, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Amy, I've been kind of teasing this for a couple hours. You and I were on a podcast, video podcast the other day together, and our buddy Jimmy thought you and I might argue and fight, and I thought we got along great. I thought we had a really great conversation, so much so that I said, hey, Jimmy, can I have Amy's number? I'd love to talk to her on the radio. You were so pleasant to debate the other night.
Well, thank you. You know, I think that in the climate that we're all trying to make our points, get our points across and honor each other's perspectives, it's important to make way and leave room for freedom of speech, because that is the best way for political discourse to translate into the general public and represent what society, really, really reflects. And I think that I could see, I understood your point the other night, and I'm not sure if your listeners know exactly what we were talking about, but I heard you talking quite a bit today on your show about the transgender athletes and the conundrum of how to support athletes that want to compete at all levels, but also respect the rights and the recognition of every gender involved. And so I do, I appreciated your counterpoints and I enjoyed the debate.
Yeah, so, and I don't want to make this all, because I know you guys are about a lot of different issues, and you and I spent so much time the other night talking about that, and I felt bad because I wanted to learn more about Take Back Connecticut as a group in general, and not necessarily just an issue. To pick up what you and I were talking about for this audience, Amy and I were discussing the issue with the transgender athletes, which I have mentioned a couple of times already today. Just mentioned this story about Glenn Youngkin. Amy, I just think back to pre-election when Bob Stefanowski had Glenn Youngkin come up here. And, literally the kids in Virginia were protesting his policies. And I thought, oh, my goodness, it looks like this is not popular with the friends of the transgender students. My concern is all of these 16 and 17 year olds in 2 years time or a year time, they register, they're just instantly going to become Democrats because they feel like they're under attack. Now, that's a perception. I don't think that's necessarily reality, because as I said to you the other night, and I'll have you kind of get into it, I your concerns about the unfairness, the advantages that the athletes have, I get all of the concerns, and my whole thing has been, I don't know what the answer is. Just today, or yesterday, I guess, Glenn Youngkin brought up maybe having more gender-neutral bathrooms as a possible solution. Because like you just said, we do want to accommodate everybody, and we want to be respectful of everybody, especially the people who are just going about their normal business.
Right. And I think for me, because I did found the group Take Back Connecticut, which, as you mentioned, is a group of action-oriented, liberty-loving, patriotic individuals. I also founded a group called Parents' Choice, which is a single voting issue group, encompassing parental rights on all different levels. And this has been a huge topic that I've talked to parents of transgender children and parents of children that are typically developing without gender dysphoria. And I've listened to the concerns on both sides. For me, I definitely see that we have to be sensitive to the children and the families that are experiencing gender dysphoria, which is a diagnostic criteria. There is criteria that needs to be met for it to be diagnosed as a mental disorder. So when you're dealing with a mental disorder that children have, we have to be sensitive to the medical needs and the unfortunate outcomes that we have seen other children experience, including depression and unfortunately suicide. So it is not an issue that we can simply say, you're a boy or a girl, and so you should use a boy's bathroom or a girl's bathroom. End of story, period, end of sentence. I wish it were that simple, but it's not.
Right.
And we have to acknowledge that, and we have to be sensitive to the families that are struggling with this, because we are in a time and place of uncharted waters. So we are in a vacuum in terms of legislation. We do not have anything that we can lean on and point to and say, this is the answer, this is the solution, and this is the law. There are some gaps in the law right now. But in the interim, we do have morality, and we do have ethics, and we do have compassion. And so I would hope that any agency or organization that has a physical brick and mortar, so to speak, where people, public people, go in and out freely, that they can in some way accommodate someone that is identifying as the opposite gender, the opposite sex, and do so willfully and do so with compassion. With that being said, I do also, as a woman, as a mother of a 12-year-old pre-teenage daughter, I do have some concerns that it could be abused, that we could have, you know, folks of the other gender coming into women's bathrooms with ill intentions, voyeurism. We just saw someone get arrested for voyeurism in the state just a few days ago. I think it was a few days ago, yep. Within the past week or so. So we do have incidents that we have to also have great concern for the protection and the safety of women and children, and as well as men and young boys. I'm not sure if that answers kind of
where it definitely does. Again, like I said, you know, I think all the, and this is the other thing, Amy, you know, in talking to listeners even this week, a lot of people will say to me, you know, I feel like even if I were to like air any or any of the concerns Amy just said, that people would think I'm transphobic or a bigot and everyone hates you. And again, my whole thing is I hate that people feel like we can't ask questions or we can't talk about what has become a very controversial issue and one that scientifically we don't really fully grasp. And as you right, we've been discussing, there's not like a clear cut, hey, here's the solution, or it would be easy for us to just, oh, let's do that then. This is a complex issue. And I, you know, I have a family member who's transitioning male to female. And it's on my wife's side of the family. And her grandparents are both in their mid-80s. And I tell you, these folks are doing as well as they can to say the right pronouns, to call her by the right name now. And whenever they mess up and one of the family members gets a little upset with them, I always remind the family members, like, these people have lived their entire lives knowing one thing. Asking people to sort of change up everything, again, I think most people are as respectful as they can be about something they just don't understand. Because there's no clear-cut answers, it is the kind of thing that we do need to talk through to figure out the best solution.
Yes, and my experience has been that the people that get the most offended when someone is not using their correct pronouns or the name that they have now chosen, that may or may not reflect what's on their birth certificate. Because keep in mind that in the state of Connecticut, you can change your gender, your biological sex, your name. So it is no longer a document that really, to me, holds any validity in any of those categories anymore. But with that being said, if somebody gets deeply offended by someone not calling them by their new pronoun or their new name, I try to remind people, and I know this is an unpopular stance right now outside of the conservative movement and predominantly the Republican movement or Republican Party or center moderate minded people, that it, again, it is a mental diagnosis. It is a medical condition, mm-hmm. of dysphoria. And when you're dealing with someone that is either experiencing crisis with their, mental state, or they are sensitive or oversensitive to these types of things, it's very difficult as a layperson, as someone that's not trained, the average person is not trained in psychology and does not have a degree on how to handle these types of things. And it, to me, it just signals and triggers the bigger problem here, is that, you know, the expectation by a fraction of the population has been expecting us to coalesce with their mindset and to coalesce with their mentality. And to me, that's not only a breach of the freedom of speech and freedom of expression, but it's also asking us to go along with a false narrative. So, you know, religiously and in different capacities, we don't have to agree with someone's lifestyle. We don't have to honor their new pronoun. We don't have to, you know, coalesce with what their narrative is. I just think that it shows that there's an expectation of the vast majority to accept what is taking place and to endorse what is taking place by honoring the pronoun and the change in the name and everything. And that's a personal decision, because I do know people that work in Catholic schools that are Christians and work in Christian schools or teach Sunday school, and they have deeply held beliefs where they're not going to look at a young, you know, adolescent child and take commands basically from them, telling them, I'm not a boy, I'm a girl. And they're, you know, 12 years old, and they're trying to get the endorsement of the adult sitting in front of them saying, you will say that I'm a girl and I'm really a boy. You will call me this name. You will use this pronoun. And that's where the gap in legislation has really created the issue, because you can't force people to acknowledge you as something other than what you are.
Right.
You simply can't. And religious beliefs do come into play, and policy working at organizations comes into play. I'm sure there's going to be someone out there who's the first person that's going to lose their job because they did not call someone by the correct pronoun. And this is where we get into a really slippery slope, because how do you police something like this? And for me, it fundamentally comes back to right and wrong. There's fact and there's fiction. There's truth and there's untruth.
Amy, we gotta take a quick break. We'll be right back. Amy Borden from Take Back Connecticut next on WICC. My guest is Amy Borden from Take Back Connecticut. Amy, I think part of a lot of what you're talking about, and I like, again, just even a description of Take Back Connecticut, you talk about common sense. I think that's one of the things that sort of escaped people. And I think when we can get closer to the middle, closer to something that makes sense for everybody, people can sort of acquiesce to that. And I don't want to just pigeonhole your group. Like, I know it's not all about the transgender kids. What else? Take Back Connecticut, it's a pretty big group now on Facebook. It's growing. What other issues are important to you and the folks at Take Back Connecticut?
So it's predominantly a conservative-minded group, and Republicans. We do have quite a bit of independent, registered independents in our group. But overall, the group itself tracks legislation, and as you probably are aware, there's some really bad bills going on right now between the gun laws that are trying to be changed by Governor Lamont, his administration, and the supermajority of Democrat legislators in Connecticut. So we follow and track legislation. We have been following, you know, there is a website that Gail Mastrofrancesco, who's a fantastic representative, House of Representative for Connecticut, she has badbillsct.com, I think is the website. Don't quote me on that. It could be .org. But so we follow bad bills. We get together. We have social meetups. We do rallies. I get tons and tons of emails, text messages, and instant messages from parents and individuals that are trying to fight bad policy either at the municipal level the state level, and in some cases the federal level, as we're talking about the transgender athletes. I've been working with some of the parents that are now in their appeal in the Second Circuit Court of Appeals for the case again, you know, for the transgender athletes participating in the track teams in Connecticut. So, as a group, we are not a 501c3 or a 501c4. We're not registered as a nonprofit. We prefer right now to remain a group that can be vocal in politics and reach out to our legislators and persuade the public to follow the same bills that we're following and be active in the community and also run for office. So for as far as my role, one of the favorite things I like to do is to identify budding politicians or highly active individuals and groom them towards running for office. Because quite honestly, the Republican Party has faced a tremendous amount of attrition, especially after last year's losses. So we have to be actively recruiting not only members to the party, but leaders within the party to step out and run for office. So any way that I can support them and steer them towards resources such as CTRA.us, which is Connecticut Republican Assembly, who also aligns with a lot of my group's goals to getting conservative-minded people elected in the state of Connecticut. We just try to leverage, you know, for lack of a better term, I try to leverage my Rolodex. I try to connect people to other people. I try to link people up with mentors. I've mentored a couple of people myself that are, you know, younger than me and have expressed an interest in getting involved in politics in Connecticut. And right now, that has been, I've pivoted towards that mostly. So it's not just about growth. While I am excited that the group is growing exponentially, what I really gauge our success on is, do we have people that are confident enough and equipped enough to step forward and confidently run for office? So that has been my focus, and it will remain my focus for 2023.
Amy, you and I don't agree on all the issues, but I love your passion. I love the fact that you're a person who takes action. I think more people have to be involved. One of my biggest issues with the Connecticut Republican Party, which I am registered with, has been the fact that they've lost a lot. And to see a group like this, I feel like this can only kind of help and kind of influence the party and the politicians in this state to at least be able to acknowledge what their constituents are telling them. The Facebook group is Take Back Connecticut. If you're into common sense and you're a bit conservative, this might be just the group for you. Amy Borden, I always love talking to you, and you'll always have a place to come talk to me, whether it be here or TV or wherever.
I'd love to.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. I'll be in touch again very soon, and I can't wait to talk to you again.
From myself and all of my group, God bless the work that you're doing, and let's keep pushing it forward and take back Connecticut.
Much appreciated, Amy Borden. My next guest, I've been saying all week, I was going to get a police officer on this show. And I got one with maybe the coolest name in law enforcement. His name is Sergeant Steve Austin from the Hartford Police Department. Sergeant Austin, thanks for being here.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Now I'm going to just let people know, because I started the show off and I mentioned you and I had a great conversation earlier today. So, thank you for that wonderful phone call. It was great to sort of get to know you. Just a little pre-interview so we can kind of figure out what we were going to talk about. And you said, yeah, I'm happy to do it as long as I could talk recruitment. And so I thought, Steve, why don't we start and we'll end with you doing a little recruiting bit? Because I'll say this, and I told you this on the telephone, and we can get into this in a minute. I am pro Black Lives Matter, and I am pro blue lives. I don't think that those things are mutually exclusive. I think people can support the police and black people at the same time. Your thoughts?
Well, I'm just going to touch on that blue lives and the Black Lives Matter thing. Since I'm an African American, I kind of hope, and I'm a police officer, I kind of hope they're mutually the same thing.
There, yeah.
So. I think they have a lot in common. I
right?
hope so. But, you know, I'm just happy to be here. Listen, guys, I just want to thank you for having me on this afternoon. You know, here at the Hartford Police Department, you know, we're out recruiting. That's what I do right now. I'm in the Career Development Division. I've been here for 19 years. One of the greatest and most rewarding careers I've ever had. I've had several, so I got to add that in there. But here working in Hartford, this is where I was born and where I was raised, and I attended schools. I have my brothers and sisters. We all attended the same schools. We grew up here. So it's been a great city. The city has done many, many wonderful things for me and my family. And I just want to offer that opportunity to someone else who's looking for a career, and I hope a career in law enforcement here with the Hartford Police Department.
For people who are interested, join HPD at Hartford.gov is the email that you could send. You can also follow them on Instagram at HartfordCTPolice. What exactly are you looking for in the way of police officers? Are there age restrictions, height, weight? What are we looking for?
Well, we don't have any. The only age restriction we have, you must be 21 years old.
Okay.
That's it. If you're 21 and older. And I say older, I emphasize that, because we've had people come on in their 30s, their 40s, even their 50s, who look for something different in their life. They had a change of careers, and they were looking for something different than the corporate world. And they said, hey, I wanted to do something in terms of service. How can I help? And that's what we do here in Hartford. We help people. We're problem solvers. And we're looking for people who want to work along that same line, because we're very transparent. Our model here is our community policing model, and we're very, very big on that. So if that's something that interests you, I mean, come on down to the Hartford Police Department. Come see me, Sergeant Steve Austin, at 860-757-4338, and give me a call. I can show you the path to a great career that's going to be very rewarding and on multiple levels in terms of your economically and spiritually, because it does wonders for the soul when you're able to help somebody and not expect something in return.
Steve Austin, let me ask you this. Are you finding it's harder these days to recruit police officers given the political climate that we're living in?
Well, you know, I'm glad you asked that, because people often ask me, is it the political climate? I think it's a political climate, but it's a political climate that affects all industries. I have friends who are in the health care industry. I have friends who are in the insurance industry. I have friends who are just in regular corporate America. And they constantly tell me, Sergeant, you know, I can't find good people either. And when we do, they want to come in, and then they want to change jobs in 6 months, or they want all kind of concessions and specialized treatment. So it's unique. I think it's a unique situation coming out of this pandemic that America is facing in general. And I think the young people who are coming out of college, they're looking for more satisfaction from the careers. And I think that's something that we as a police department can offer. We really can, because we have so many different divisions. There's so many ways you can help and be fulfilled in your career. It's not – there's never a same day, so to speak. You never, ever can predict what the day is going to be like. It's so unique. TV and the TV shows – don't do our career justice, because I've been able to meet so many wonderful people. I've experienced so many great things. Being a police officer has allowed me to do that. I've traveled all over the state of Connecticut, throughout New England, and all the way down to New Orleans, just meeting different people in the field, but also meeting different people from different communities. And it's given me a much wider and broader thought process on seeing how other people live, as opposed to just here in Connecticut, but realizing we all have the same thing in common, is that we want public safety, that we want to have great things and great education for our families. These are common denominators I find across the country.
All right, let's get down to the nitty-gritty then. If we're going to do some recruiting, does this pay well? Is this that's what people really want to know, Sergeant Austin.
Well, it does. I can say that right now. I can sit here to tell you that a guy who comes in this job over a 25-year career will make almost $2.5 million.
All right.
Now, $2.5 million might not seem like a lot to a lot of people, but over 25 years, that's a hell of a damn good career. And I think anyone can have that kind of career and be able to take care of their families and take the money they have and invest. I mean, I definitely believe in investing and making your money work for you. So that's something that I think that any young man or woman who wants to start a career, wants to get their first home, who wants to get their kids through college. I have three, and I put all three through college. I have one left, thank goodness. But, you know, it's a process, and this job has allowed me to be able to do that. And I just want to say thank you to the City of Hartford for giving me that opportunity.
I'll tell you this, too. We're talking to Sergeant Steve Austin. All of my interactions, I worked in Hartford for about 10 years. Any interactions I've ever had with the police in Hartford have always been super positive. I think as far as city police go, I think the Hartford Police Department is one of the best ones. Here's the other thing as far as recruiting, and I'm sure you're aware of this, but Connecticut, as far as police officers are concerned, this is one of the safest states to be a policeman in.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I've worked with the Chief of Public Safety, Chief Ravella, when he was here in Hartford. I've worked with great chiefs from Daryl Roberts and a few others here in the city of Hartford. So it's just a great state. I love Connecticut. This is my home state. Hartford is my hometown. Listen, I've been to many, many different states, and I'll tell you, Connecticut has one of the best standards of living. And, you know, you can talk about it. I mean, we're not perfect, but where is? So, I mean, we have things that we need to work on, we can get better at. But that's one of the great things, because we always run into people who are like-minded, and you can have these conversations and sit down and try to make the city, make the state always a much, much better place to live. And I love it that people out here nowadays, they want to work towards something good, because I think working together on common goals and common issues are what makes America the great country that we live in, and Connecticut the best state in the union.
We are talking to Hartford Police Sergeant Steve Austin.
What?
Steve, I really appreciate you coming on here. We got our recruiting out of the way. Now I want to talk about some issues, and then before you go, we'll give you one more shot to get that recruiting in, because Hartford does need, well, we need more police all around the state, and including the state police department, but Hartford definitely should be top of mind for people. Now, a lot of talk about the police accountability bill, and I suspect, Steve, that that's been probably hurtful, just again, in the way some people understand that bill, hurtful towards recruiting. I know a lot of police officers retired or left the business after this thing was passed. Your thoughts on the police accountability bill?
Yeah, Joe. Well, listen, you know, police accountability, listen, it's here. We're going to live with it. It's not going away. I think right now, just like everything else, as change is something that always happens. And I think, and I think here in our department and the agencies all across America, people are going to adapt, and the agencies are going to adapt, and they're going to take on these things, because at the end of the day, we're here to serve people. That's our number one priority. And when we serve people, preservation of life, and take care of public safety. And I think accountability has always been within most agencies. It has always been here within the Hartford Police Department. And so it's not something scary boogeyman coming out of the dark. We recognize that there are things that need to be corrected, and we are looking at ourselves, because we've done so many things here within our own department that wasn't mandated by the state, that wasn't mandated by legislation, that we just took on a part ourselves just to show that our department, through our very endeavors in terms of our community engagement, through our faith-based officers, through our community service officers, through the various ways we interact with our youth and our churches and our civic organizations, we've been transparent. We go out of our way to engage this city here in Hartford. And I can tell you, being a Hartford resident, being a kid that was born and raised here, I think, you know, our agency is like, you know, way ahead of most agencies and stuff. So when we talk about accountability, I don't think it's such a scary thing. Change is always kind of like something that people get a little nervous about, but at the end, I think it's something that was needed, and we're going to see that we're going to become better because of it. So it's not something to fear; it's something to embrace, and also make it aware, because it's not going away. It's
right.
Not going to go away. And I believe when people say support the blue, support the police, people support the police. I want to put that out there, and people in Hartford support our police. What they all are asking for and I can tell you because I've been a resident here pretty much most of my life, is that these communities want the police to support them as well. And that's something that we do. So it's a two-way street, and I think as moving forward, I think that's something that is not going to be such of a buzz or cold word or a dividing word. And I think the whole accountability now is being used in that fashion by, you know, people who have access to grind or whatever. So I just say, hey, let us do our job. You know, if there's issues, we're going to put them right out there, be transparent about it, and we're going to correct it if we have a problem within our own agency. And those are the things that, you know, we should be doing.
You know, Sergeant Steve Austin, I think even the most left-wing, you know, Antifa person could tell you that the majority of police officers are amazing people who do amazing work. I think most people feel that way, and it generally is one or two people in any department that seem to be causing the bulk of the trouble. I say if you do your job as a police officer well, this police accountability bill won't affect you at all.
You're right. It doesn't impact. Listen, I can tell you right now, 99% of the officers, are we going to have a bad apple? That goes without saying.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a bad dentist out there? Of course. You know, if you got a bad root canal and you went to that bad dentist, you know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
So there are bad people in every profession. There are bad lawyers. There are bad doctors. There are bad insurance people. So it doesn't really matter what field that you're in, but what you want to strive for is excellence. And as we continue to strive for excellence, we won't always hit it 100%, but we'll always be moving in the right direction. And those are the things that you want to look for in officers that are coming on the job. When I talk to people who are thinking about careers in law enforcement, I always ask them, like, why do you want to be a police officer? And you tell me just to protect and serve, I kind of know, well, you know, you're just kind of like, you don't know really why. But if you say you want to respect, protect, and then serve, because that's what it takes. You have to respect the people that you're working for, because at the same time, you want them to respect you. So it's a two-way street, like I've always said. And in terms of accountability, we've always been accountable. And I think accountability is a great thing, just like anything in life. We should be accountable for our actions. The officers that who fear that, those are the officers who are also doing things they probably shouldn't be doing. And that's the bottom line. If they're retiring because someone's going to hold you accountable for your actions, That's fine, whether you not be. But if you're going to be doing the job and doing the job correctly, you don't have to fear, because although there are some things that may not look good on tape, you know, because always you see these, everyone mm-hmm. has a YouTube or a cell phone and a video, it may not look perfect. Then nothing perfect, but when you put it in context, it usually is okay. And those are the things that we talk about always, the body cams. We're ahead of the pack on that. We have that in terms of our getting our information out through our PIOs and any incident, any officer-involved incident, use of force. Harvard Police Department has been leading the way. And that's why this is a great agency. And anyone in the state of Connecticut or anyone who's out in Massachusetts or New York, Westchester County, you want to come down and work for a great agency, come to the Harvard Police Department. Come to me at 860-757-4338. Sergeant Austin will get you taken care of.
Sergeant Steve Austin, I want to ask you one more thing before I let you go here. Nice job on the last-minute recruiting. That was fantastic. There's obviously been a lot of proposals for gun control in Connecticut on top of what we've already seen. As a police officer, as a black man, and as a black conservative, what are your thoughts on these bills? Does it help the police if guns are harder to get, if there's better background checks, if these things are all registered? And then the red flag laws, you know, being able to take guns away in domestic violence situations, is that a tool for you guys, or do you see that as an infringement?
Well, I want to back up just a little bit, because you touched on about four or five different things here.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I am conservative. I'm fiscally conservative.
Okay.
Who happens to be black? I'm not a black conservative. I don't think conservatism has a color. It's just you either are or you're not.
Gotcha. Yeah, you're right.
We got to get away from the labels. I'm just a guy who likes to. I like my money and I want to keep it.
I'm also a man who likes to keep his money.
So I don't think that's so much because of the labels. Or that's where we kind of like we start putting each other into these boxes, and it kind of, you know, pins us to one narrative or another. In terms of the gun control, well, listen, I'm a big Second Amendment proponent.
Mm-hmm.
However, just like anything else, we just need some common sense out here. You know, I don't have all the answers. We have a lot of smart people in our Senate in our legislatures here in the state of Connecticut and down in Washington. These are supposed to be the smartest of the smart, the brightest of the bright. And we elect these people every year, so we're kind of hoping and depending upon them to do what's right by the communities that they serve. In terms of what that looks like, in terms of we don't want to take away anyone's power. I would never advocate that. However, we need to understand and we have to be realistic that we also live in a country that has the highest death rate by firearms than any other civilized first world country in the world. We need to be able to look at why don't these mass shootings happen in England? Why don't they happen in France or some, a lot of these other countries where they have things that are just a little different? I'm not saying we have to copy those countries, but we need to definitely take an honest look at what's going on in our own country in terms of mental health, in terms of access, in terms of how we go about allowing and who we allow to purchase firearms and some of the loopholes that are used to transfer ownership. And in terms of like domestic violence, I think that's something that needs to be dealt with. Domestic violence is a terrible thing, and it's definitely I would say it's a good indicator of what potentially could happen down the road in terms of in a relationship, because relationships are all about emotions. And when people get emotional, crazy things happen. I can tell you, I've seen the nicest people when they get emotional, then it's just not the same individual.
Right.
So, and that's just been my experience just through law enforcement, but just in life in general. Because, you know, that's why I say I always like the guys with a little bit of life experience to come on the job, because they probably had a girlfriend or boyfriend or two. They've had a relationship. So when they go to a situation where it's a little heated, they can, you know, use their own experience to help them navigate that situation or that incident.
Sergeant Steve Austin, I appreciate your time. Up against the break here. I could talk to you all day. We'll definitely be in touch and talk again real soon.